want to say, Father, is we are so glad that we're a delight to you, that we can make you happy. And we are so privileged to have that place in your life where we bring a smile to you, where we cause your heart to be filled with joy because we love you and we find you wonderful and amazing and delightful. What a gift you are to us. And what a gift this relationship that we have for you, have with you. Thank you, Lord. Now, I just ask, Father, that for all of us here this morning, you just keep impressing that on us and grow your delight in us for you. Thank you, Lord. Amen. Well, I'm not speaking out of James this morning. I thought, well, I was in a series when Mother's Day came, and I felt like I needed to do something a little more directed to mom and women. So today, what I'm going to do is return the favor. On Mother's Day, we looked in the book of Ruth, and we focused on the women there, particularly Ruth. So I'm going back to the book of Ruth, and today I'm looking at the only, at that time in the book, living man who's mentioned by name, and that's Boaz. And I want us to look at some lessons for Boaz. They think that his name means something like, and you know, there's obviously some argument about exactly, but it means something like either in strength or strength is in him. And I know as a guy, and guys, we take pride in our strength. Actually, whatever that strength is, we take pride in any physical strength. But I would say that's probably true for all of us, men and women alike. We all have strength, and we have various strengths in our lives, and we take pride in those. We're glad for those. And I think what one of the things we can learn from Boaz and Boaz's role here in the story of Ruth that I kind of want to talk about this morning is what can we do with our strength? You know, in a way, what's our strength good for besides us feeling good about it? What does God want to do with our strength? And through the story, we're going to see too, people like drop into our lives. And probably if we're paying attention, we'll notice that at various times there are people who suddenly have kind of come into our life. And one of the things that we're going to see in the story of Boaz is that God is putting them there to give us an opportunity to use our strength for them. And it's really a way that God is able to bring about his purposes in someone else's life. And as we look at Boaz and just some of his responses and kind of things that he did in this story, my guess is if you guys went back for yourself, reread again the book of Ruth with kind of just eyes on Boaz, there are probably other things that you'll notice and learn as well. But I think, and what I want to reflect on this morning, is just some things about how Boaz uses his strength that will help us in knowing what do we do with the strength that we have, and what are some things to help us make it a benefit for people and not a problem to them? Because sometimes our strength can be a problem to others depending on how we approach them and what we do with that strength. So I guess the first thing I would say then is it would be good for us to be someone whose life is worth falling into. You know, we want it to be a good thing when somebody falls into your life or into my life. And Boaz was that kind of person. It was a good thing that Ruth and Naomi end up kind of, in a way, stumbling into his life. And so I just want to read from Ruth chapter 2, verse 1 and 3 and 19 and 20, just to give you a little sense of that this is what was happening. It says, "Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz." And now this is like the narrator just kind of giving us this information, because everything up to this time in the story was about the situation that Ruth and Naomi found themselves in, and their other daughter-in-law, Orpah, once all the husbands died and they were alone in this foreign land, and decided, let's go back, you know, to Israel. And then we're told this little statement before the story moves on, that there was this guy Boaz, and he was part of Elimelech's family. And then it begins. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. She has no thought of whose field she's going to. She says here, anybody who will say, okay, you know, you can come into my fields and pick up grain behind the harvesters. And that was something they were required to do. When you were harvesting, you had to allow poor people, after the harvesters went through, to come behind them, and any grain that fell on the ground, they could pick it up. And so Ruth is saying to Naomi, look, it's harvest time. I'll go out there and let's see what happens, and I'll find some place and get us something to eat, basically. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. So this was not their plan. This was not their intention. It just so happens that of all the possible fields, she ends up in the field that's Boaz, who is connected to their family. So she picks the grain, comes back, and then it picks up in verse 20. Her mother-in-law asked her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. She doesn't know who that man is at this point. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz, she said. The Lord bless him, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead, she added. That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers, or you may have read it as kinsman redeemer. And so I just want you to see this. Ruth and Naomi did not say, let's see who could help us. We know we got a relative here, and by law, he actually has some obligation. They're like, okay, we're hungry. We don't have any way to support ourselves. I'm going to go out, find a field, see where I land. And lo and behold, of all the possibilities, she lands in the field of Boaz, who is a relative who actually has the possibility, even within their legal system, to kind of rescue them and make some decisions and choices that could totally change their life. And so I just want to remind us this morning that God is often about the business of dropping people into our lives who we are in a unique position to do something to help them. And they get there unwittingly. But that is exactly what's going on. I know, and I probably mentioned it, it's been a month at least, I guess. So let me just say again, this kinsman redeemer or guardian redeemer, the basic idea was if a man dies and he hasn't had any sons, well, there's no way for his family name to continue and for his property to stay as an inheritance in his family. So if there is a man who is a blood relative to the man who died, there was a thing called levirate marriage. I won't bother explaining that. Basically, there was a law that operated where that relative could then marry the widow. And if she had a son, that son would actually be an heir to the deceased father. And he could now inherit all of his property and carry on his name. And Boaz was one of those people who could do that for Naomi and Ruth. And if you don't know the story at all the men in their family died, so there was no man, so there could be no marriage, there could be no children, no sons. And they would lose everything, and all the property that had belonged to Naomi's father would go over to one of his other relatives, and that would be the end of it for his family. But I want to say this, kind of, if I can use this concept of guardian redeemer in a broader sense, a guardian redeemer is one who, by the circumstances of their life, is in a position to lift another And every one of us can be guardian redeemers. Every one of us in some way, in some area, are in a position where we have the capacity to lift another person out of their situation, out of their difficulty, out of their struggle, out of their loss or their poverty, or whatever weakness they have or trouble has come into their life. All of us can be a guardian redeemer in some way, at some point in someone's life. And it's highly likely, I'll probably say this again in the next 20 minutes, it's highly likely that God already has or is right now or will drop someone into your life where you can function as a guardian redeemer for them. And your strength will be just what they need to make the difference in your life. But you know, for that to work in some way, we have to be alert to whom God is placing in our life. And, you know, there are a lot of stereotypes about men and women, and unfortunately, a lot of us fall into them. They're actually kind of characterized things about us. And probably for a lot of us guys, we just don't notice a lot of things. I don't know why. I'm sure there are good reasons for it. I mean, how many times have you gone looking for something and the woman in the house or the wife or your mother or whoever it is, like, it's right here. They open the drawer and there it is right in the front. And you're like, I looked there. Well, in Ruth 2:5, Boaz apparently is away and the harvest is going on. He comes back and it says, and he greets everyone in the name of the Lord. And it says, Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, who does that young woman belong to? He noticed there was somebody that wasn't there, that's not been a normal part of their harvesting. She wasn't part of the group that had been working in his fields. And he notices and he wants to know, who is this person? We need to be alert to who's in our life. We need to be alert to the changes in our lives, to people who have come new into our life, into our sphere of influence. And we ought to be asking why, we don't have to ask them, but why are you here? But we probably need to be asking God for sure, why are they here? You know, I know I'm like this. We take most things for granted. And people come in and out of our lives, and we don't really think much of it. But it's highly likely that God has dropped that person into your life, into your arena of life, because it may be that you have some strength that can be used for their benefit that would lift them from where they currently are and something that's going on. So I need to be asking, why are they here? Do I have a part to play in their life? Do I have something that can benefit them? Can I do something for them? But when we enter into these kinds of relationships where we have strength, and maybe a strength that another person doesn't have, we do have to be careful. And I would say one thing is we need to be inclined to guard people's vulnerability and dignity. Because oftentimes, you know, when someone gives to another, it's often at a point of vulnerability in that person's life. And it can be a belittling experience for the one who's receiving, depending on how, you know, a gift is given. And I appreciate kind of what was in Boaz's mind in terms of Ruth. So let me read 2:8-9 and then a couple other verses. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. And even the fact that he refers to her as his daughter, but I'll read it and then I'll comment. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I've told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. And then in verse 15 and 16, as she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men. Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. See, they weren't supposed to do that. They were supposed to stay behind. The harvesters would go through the sheaves and they would glean and whatever fell to the ground they could get. And he's like, if she ends up where she's not supposed to be, you leave her alone. And don't say anything to her like you're not supposed to be there, you know. Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even, listen to this, even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up. And don't rebuke her. I mean, this is like incredible awareness and effort to make sure this is the best experience she could have. And I even want you guys, you take some of the sheaves, you put them in a bundle, pull a couple out and just drop them on the ground like you didn't know. And then as she's coming up behind, she's going to find them and have them. And don't say anything to her like, hey, you can't have those. He is totally aware, one, of her vulnerability, even as a woman. And let me say this here. I wanted to say this somewhere in this. This is not a story about strong men rescuing weak women. That's not what this is. Reality is, though, in most cultures, women are more vulnerable than men. For all kinds of reasons. Sometimes pure strength is part of the vulnerability. Sometimes the very laws themselves protect men in ways that they do not protect women. And that was definitely true in this time, in the world that Boaz was living in. Sometimes the biases of culture make women more vulnerable. And Boaz was very aware of the vulnerabilities that she would have as a woman who's not connected to any of these people who are working here. And it's sad, but he even says to the men, it says he told the men not to lay a hand on her. Which tells me it's likely that some man among them would have abused her, would have taken advantage of her. Probably sexually, at least physically. And he's making sure that's not going to happen. I'm using my position, I'm using my strength, not to take advantage of this woman, but to protect her from anybody else who would even think about taking advantage of her. And he understood the vulnerability of her poverty. And he's going out of his way to use the means that he has to give her extra without like damaging her dignity. Without even making her feel like, you know, he's taking extra measures, because he recognizes how poor she is and helpless she is. No, we're going to do this in a way that she's not insulted, but we're going to make sure, you know, her needs are being met here. I picked up that where he calls her my daughter. Now, she was clearly younger, and we learned that later. But it made me think of 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2, where Timothy... This is being said by Paul, I think, to Timothy. Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity. I mean, we're not dumb. There's definitely attraction between men and women. We are different. God has designed us this way. And there's natural recognition, awareness, appreciation, and attraction. And Paul's saying, we need to make sure that we're relating, especially between men and women. But I think this goes in every kind of relationship, wherever there's strength and power that is in one person's hands more than another. Let's find a way of thinking of people, of relating to people, of treating people in a way that is respectful and bestows dignity on them. So think of the younger women as your sisters. Or your daughter. Treat them like your daughter. And so I like that about Boaz, daughter, and this is not the only time he refers to her that way. She even ends up, they end up marrying each other. But he is dealing with her and handling this relationship and treating her in a way, daughter is the right perspective for how he's going to help her. Yeah, and you know, when we're in relationships with people who maybe we have more resources, more power, and I'll talk about that in just a little bit. It's really important that we're looking beneath the surface, because sometimes it's easy just to see the person's weakness or what they're lacking or the difficulty they're in or the effects of the difficulty they're in or the hard things that have happened to their life. And so let me read Ruth 2, 11 and 12. Boaz replied, because she ends up, the context, she asks him, why are you being so nice to me? And I thought, in this kind, he said, well, because you're a very attractive young woman. And that happens to attractive young women. Somebody was just telling us a story recently about they've never gotten the ticket. Okay, here's my question for the guys. Have you ever gotten out of a ticket by smiling at the officer? It's not worked for me. Boaz replied, and she wants to know, why are you doing this? Boaz replied, I've been told, this makes me cry, I'm sorry. I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you do not know or you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. It's like, I know who you really are. I've heard the amazing stories about what you have done. And that moves me to want to help you. You've left everything to come someplace you've never been, people you've never known, all out of your loyalty to your mother-in-law. And we know from having read this, and a sense of loyalty to the God who she came to believe in. There's probably not enough good I could do for you. That's why I've done this. I don't just see some poor woman. I don't just see some attractive woman. I don't just see some foreigner. I see this amazing character in you, in this heart, in this person. And when I see that, I want to do something for you. I want to be a help in your life. So when we see these opportunities, then we have a chance to, I'll say it this way, it's my next point, to leverage our advantage for other people. And the truth is we all have advantages of some kind. And we come by these things in all different ways. Most of them really not by our own efforts, but things that fall to us. And I was just thinking about, you know, kind of how some of those come. Sometimes they come by birth. You happen to be born in the right country, in the right family, who happen to have all these resources that many others don't have. And because you're born there or to them, you've got them too. They come to us by family. Maybe your family was born into money or power or maybe they've earned it and they've given it to you. You inherit it from them. They've shared it with you. They've paid for you to go to college. They can buy you cars. They can do things for you that you couldn't do for yourself. And it gives you an advantage. It comes by gifting. You happen to have certain gifts that you're able to turn every dollar into five. You're good at it. Some of us have no business sense. And it's like with plants, everything that's green turns brown. But you can make money. Or you can build things. Or you are a visionary and you can just see what's possible that other people can't see and are able to get us going somewhere that's going to actually, it's going to turn out good, but other people can't see that. Or you're great with your hands. You can build things. You can fix cars. You're awesome with wood. Tools are like an extension of your body, where the rest of us are things that hurt us. They come by, these advantages come through education or your personality. Man, you can convince anybody to do anything. You just got a way about you that people are like, okay, I believe you. What do you want? How much should I buy? You make great sales people. Sometimes those advantages come by the law. The law says you can do that, but you can't. You can vote, you can't. You can go to that place, but you can't. You can own property, you can't. And it gives us an advantage. We have advantages by our experience. Some of you have experienced things that you understand how something happens. You've had experience that you've overcome hard things, that you've gained wisdom and a tenacity that others don't have. And that gives you an advantage to help somebody who hasn't been there, doesn't understand that. And you can help them with that. And so the question here is, can we use who we are and what we have to empower others? Can we leverage our privilege, whatever it is, for the benefit of someone else? Who might be in your life, in your sphere of life, in your arena? Maybe is even there for that very purpose. For you to use your advantage for them, not for yourself. This idea of leveraging really is kind of stuck with me since a few years ago. I watched an interview. Bill Hybels, pastor of Willow Creek in Illinois, was interviewing Bono. And it was a fantastic interview. And in the interview, Bono clearly articulated his faith in Jesus and his absolute commitment to Jesus and what he's learned about valuing the church and the role of the church and how God is using the church. But he was asking Bono, why are you doing this stuff, the One campaign, and why are you, fighting for AIDS and people who are poor? And he said, here's what I've come to realize. I've been given celebrity. It's just what our culture values. I have celebrity. It's brought notoriety. People pay attention to what I say. They listen just because of the celebrity I have. I've decided to leverage my celebrity for the poor. Wow, that is an amazing perspective. Take the power that you have. And rather than say, I don't really have power, or no, I don't want it, just ignore me. I'm just like everybody else. Say, look, power has been given to me, advantage has been given to me. I'm gonna leverage it for others. For people who've not been given power, and it's even been taken from them, where they can't do for themselves as much as I can do, if I'll come alongside and get thousands, tens of thousands of other people involved. I thought about power probably in its essence is the ability to get what you want. How about getting what we want for the sake of others? That's like servant power, which I think is how God operates. That's what I saw in Boaz. It's servant power. What do I have, and how can I leverage it for the advantage of someone else? The last thing I want to say, and I'm just going to read this little piece of this story, is, as we're leveraging our advantage, our abilities, our power, again, we need to make sure we do it in a way that's not patronizing, that makes people feel like worse about themselves. And it's easy for us to do that just because of how we look at people who don't have what we have. There's a great book called Same Kind of Different as Me. I know a bunch of you have read this. It was written by two people, and it's the two people who it's about. One is an international art dealer, and this guy up in the Fort Worth area. And the other guy was a homeless guy who's living in a shelter. And this The two men wrote the book, and the art dealer and his wife, it started with her. Here was the Ruth. She wanted to help and serve, and she got them there. And then God caught this Boaz of Ron, and he began investing. Well, Ron's wife got sick with cancer, and she was very ill, and she was in the hospital. So Ron, who is the art dealer, goes to the shelter to look for his friend because he wanted to make sure he's doing okay because he really cared about this man's wife. So it picks up here. He gets in the shelter, and Ron says, I asked him if he'd seen Denver. Denver is the homeless guy that day. He's probably sleeping, he said. Sleeping, I blurted. Lazy, I thought. It was already mid-afternoon. Jim raised an eyebrow. You don't know? Know what? Well, when Denver heard about Miss Debbie, this is the guy's wife with cancer, when Denver heard about Miss Debbie, he told me she had a lot of friends that would be praying for her all day. But he figured she needed someone to pray all night. And he'd be the one to do it. Of course, my eyes widened as he went on. So he goes outside. He's describing this now. So he goes outside at midnight, sits down next to the dumpster, and prays for Miss Debbie and your family. When I get up and come down here at 3 a.m. to get breakfast going, he comes for a cup of coffee, and we pray here in the kitchen for her until 4. Then he goes back outside and prays till sunup. Denver says, ashamed, I realized again how deep grew the roots of my own prejudice, of my arrogant snap judgments of the poor. We can harm the people we're helping, that we're leveraging our strengths for, unless we have the right attitude, unless we see who these people really are, unless we see what's good in them and their heart and character, and that they're probably doing way more than we ever imagine, and may actually have a whole lot more going for them than we do for ourselves, just in a different way. So with the right perspective, bottom line is, who's God dropped into your life that the strengths you have can be for them? And how are you going to use them? And I would suggest, just ask God this week, or look around. Who is it? Who's here? I didn't realize. Why? Let's stand up. So let me just pray a blessing over you this morning, and then you're free to go and enjoy the day. So. Today I bless you in the name of the Father. Father who made you. The Father who loves you, the Father who has called you, the Father who delights in you and loves being loved by you. May you grow deeper in his love. May you become more aware of how he thinks about you. And may your heart for him grow more and more. The Lord is with you. Amen. Hey, thanks for being here today. Really appreciate you. Have a great day and week. And get prayer.